This time up on the Arantia Radio podcast, 15 things that make our world different from every other world in our system that has life forms. And you know, that's pretty interesting. 15 things that make us different on the Arantia Radio podcast. Welcome again to the Arantia Radio podcast. Jim Watkins here. And boy, another week has just flown by. And we're going to talk about ways in which Arantia is an experimental world, according to the Arantia book. Because number one, being an experimental world not only allows us to look at those differences, but it also allows us to look at it within the context of other worlds being normal. And what does normal really mean? You know, the Arantia book tells us that there are, at least in our system, when all is said and done, there'll be at least 1,000 worlds that will produce intelligent will creatures like ourselves. And they won't all be like us exactly, because every planet is unique based on the environmental conditions. But we'll all experience similar problems as we do. The Arantia book many times tells us that even though all of the conditions might be different, people are generally the same. The mind reacts. There's an interesting statement when we were talking about the universal mind. The mind reacts uniformly to conditions. So, and I think that's why maybe it makes it easier for us in the afterlife, where you would have all these different ascending beings from different worlds. There would have to be a commonality of mind. Mind is a very interesting thing, and we'll tackle that more because there's so little that our modern scientists know about the mind. Much of it is so subjective. But it really is fascinating how the universal spirit, the infinite spirit, operates through mind and what mind means to intelligent will creatures like ourselves. So, but, you know, there are things that are done differently here. And because of that, we are unique in our own experience. And I want to talk about that, but I also want to promote for the Arantia Book UBLA Society. Fellowship speaker Tom Allen, chair of the SCICR committees, considers it very important to talk with individual societies about potential future directions within the Arantia community. Doesn't that sound interesting? I'm just reading the presser. The fellowship's constitution is being revised. Great progress is being seen within this committee. Your voice can help shape how our Arantia community meets the digital future. Join this exciting discussion. And there's going to be an event 3 to 5:30 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday, February 11th. And if you Google Arantia Book Los Angeles, I'm sure you'll be able to find all the information you need. And you can come and watch. And you can, I think it'll be an interesting thing. Where does the Arantia Book go in the future? I often thought about, you know, how do we manage our expectations about the Arantia Book? And what I mean by that is it's easy to get disappointed because, and if you're a Arantia Book reader and a longtime Arantia Book reader, you know that it's easy to be disappointed by the lack of enthusiasm from people around you, especially when you try to share with them the good news about this incredible revelation. And it can be disheartening. It can even kind of stab at your faith a little bit. And I know from my own personal experience that has happened over time. But over time also, you if you read the book and you come to understand its teachings, then it's hard not to get excited about what's ahead. The Arantia Book is a roadmap to the future. It's a recreation of the past, and it talks about our role in the present. And it's so great to have such a big picture conception of the universe and our place in it. And it's exciting. It's exciting. Just talking to a friend today about he tragically lost his significant other after a long marriage, and the person passed away, and it, there's still a lot of adjusting that goes on after that person who's been in your life for so long is suddenly not there. But we talked about the importance of faith, and when you know, or when you feel that you know with a certain level of certitude that that person is there and will continue to be there, and you will at some point be with this person in some fashion. And that's such a great thing to be able to hold on to. It's an important thing. And so when we know this, we want to generally share it. We want to share it with people. We want to share the good news. It's what activates our spirit. You know, the spirit acts. You know, that's what all of this is about. If you're taking in all the good news, but you're not doing anything with it, trying to share the good news with other people, then you're not acting. You're sort of circumventing, you're short-circuiting the energy that comes with the knowledge of the Spirit and the way the Spirit moves. And so in the future, how are we going to teach the Urantia book to people? Is it always going to be person-to-person with study groups? Well, nowadays, people don't do study groups as much. They have conventions, or they have periodic, you know, sessions or gatherings. And maybe before Zoom, you could easily justify having a study group come into your home every week. And many people still do it, and it's a wonderful experience. But, you know, it's also good outreach if you could have more people come. Wouldn't it be great if you had, you know, instead of 8 people show up, or 3 or 5 that have been the same 6 people that have been showing up for a decade, you know, wouldn't it be great if other people could either listen in or perhaps join a study group on Zoom? It doesn't have the same feeling, but you're still connecting with people. And so that's, I think, partly what they're going to be talking about, Tom Allen. And again, mark your calendar, Saturday, February 11th, 3 to 5:30 Pacific time. So that'd be 6 to 7:30 on the East Coast, sponsored by the Urantia Book Los Angeles Society. And again, go to their website and you'll get more information on this event, talking about the future of delivering the Urantia book and how do we ensure its growth. Now, I will add to this, because I actually wanted to have a conversation about this, but managing expectations is also kind of important for us, because if you get your hopes up thinking that there's going to be a critical mass, I don't think we're going to see that in this lifetime. I don't think that we're going to see critical mass. Primarily, and what I mean by that is, it's not as if all of a sudden the Urantia book is going to be this big thing. I think, or maybe a few decades at minimum from this. And the reason is because society is still trying to grapple. There's so much that we're grappling with now, with the mores, the values, the ethics, the tradition versus the progressive movements that are abound. People are questioning all of those classical questions, you know, that haven't changed. The questions haven't changed, but, why are we here? What is our purpose? Now, to me, the Urantia book answers those questions. But because of the religious material that is baked into the Urantia book, a lot of people are going to be unwilling or unable to grab those conceptions. They've already made their decision that religion is not good. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, "I don't like organized religion." And I said, "Well, do you prefer unorganized religion? Is religion better because it's unorganized?" And then, of course, the person corrected themselves and said, "Well, I don't like institutional religion." And I said, "Well, I agree with you. And to a certain extent, you know, institutions end up becoming self-serving. And so it tends to move farther away from the original truths that might have inspired that particular moment. Like, we know with Christianity that even though at the root of it is Christ, it is also, over the 2,000 years since the Spirit of Truth, it has been contaminated by 1,000,001 watersheds of other faiths. I've often said that Christianity is very much like a Christmas tree. The Christmas tree itself is a symbol that comes from some belief system And they have a whole series of other things that they put on the top of the tree is the Star of David, which comes from the legend of the Magi. And so it in its purest form, Christ's teachings, turn the other cheek, love thy neighbor, go to God, trust God, by your faith shall you be saved, the golden rule, the Sermon on the Mount, keep humble, be loyal, serve your fellow man, listen to your spirit, serve others. That's the way that you serve the will of God. Those are the essential teachings of Christ. Those are the essential teachings in the Urantia book, by the way, of Christ. And by the way, those are the essential teachings of the universe. The entire universe is each with their own creator son, just like our own, teaches these same principles. And the reason is because they are eternal truths. From age to age, the eternal truths never change, especially with evolutionary will creatures. And so the stigma of Christianity for those who don't like religion at all is going to keep them from embracing the Urantia book. That's what my point is. So we shouldn't expect, and we should lower our expectations of the Urantia book ever having any commercial success, at least in this current age, this ideological age. Maybe it'll last 20 years, maybe it'll last 50. Hopefully it won't get much worse before it starts getting better. But the book will be more receptive. People will be more receptive to the book once they get over the stigma of religion and they start embracing the idea of cosmic relationships, which I think is very important. That's what I think. It's very important for people to sort of, they got to start asking the right questions, and the Urantia book will be there to answer those questions. That's really true. I think that's very true. So now we kind of want to delve into this other topic, which I noted what I called the 15 things that make us experimental. And where is that? I'll find it here. Too many windows, not enough time, right? By the way, I do have a live stream now on my Urantia book, UrantiaRadio.net website, and it's still in sort of a beta phase, but you can expect more music and more. I'm thinking of maybe taking some selected old interviews from the archives and then also having live Urantia radio topics like we're doing today, like we're doing right now as we're preparing this podcast. And right now, I am live. And I am being broadcast all over the world. And I tweeted about this a few times. My handle, if you want to follow me on Twitter, is Urantia Radio, at Urantia Radio. So you can check on that. And so if you like listening in the background, easy, you just hit the button, click the blue ball, the earth, and you'll stream whatever we're streaming. If it's not there, that just means that we're down and we're preparing new programming. So here's the all draft. Here it is. Yeah, so UrantiaRadio.net. Okay, so here we go. 15. Yeah, I came up with 18 things that are quite interesting about how Urantia is an experimental world, what makes us unique in the cosmos. And we'll just go through each one of them. Number one, our solar system came together in a much different way. A lot of planets are more, it's more common than planets are moons of larger solar orbs in addition to having a sun. So, for example, it's more common that you would have a life form evolving on a planet that is a satellite of a larger planet like Jupiter and getting a combination of heat from the sun and whatever else energy puts off. So that's something that's normal. We're abnormal, you know. Our world came to be because of the gravitational pull of a passing what looks like a black star that pulled some of the mass from our solar mother, Mon Mesha, and that makes us unique. So that's kind of interesting. Again, we're not a satellite of a giant glassish mother planet. We have a moon. Most worlds with life are satellites of large worlds like Jupiter. Life and created and planet here. Now that's interesting because a normal worlds that are more patterned. So we have 619 planets that comprise the Satania system, in the Satania system of 1,000 worlds. And ours is planet 606. So we were the 606th planet to evolve will creatures like ourselves. So we came on the stage, you know, a little less than a million years ago, and we were registered in the halls of Nebadon, and Uversa sent greetings and congratulations, and the Most Highs of Norlishadek welcomed us with open arms. And we became the 606th planet of this particular system, which is under the domain of Michael. And it's also important to recognize that it's that same domain that fell into rebellion under Lucifer, who is no longer the system sovereign. And so that makes us unique as well, which we'll get to in just a moment. But life was created and planted here. So the life carrier suns actually worked out their formula and planted three separate implantations of this basic construction of life that would eventually evolve into living life forms that would eventually evolve to human beings of will creature and spiritual potential. And in doing so, it was a unique experience, because the second thing that happened that makes us interesting about all that is that people with will and worship and wisdom appeared before the colored races. On a normal world, according to the Urantia book, colored races appear, and they are the superior Homo sapiens, for lack of a better term. And they then have the last two adjutants, the spirit adjutants, worship and wisdom. If you remember in the story of Anton and Fonda, the first humans of our world, it wasn't until they possessed and desired to worship that activated those two remaining adjutants. And that set them apart from all other will creatures that had appeared up to that time. So that was a distinction that doesn't happen normally. Usually it's colored races appear, and usually it's one at a time. And that brings me to the next one. This is the first time that all six colored races appeared from one family. One family, one woman who had 19 children. And there were pairs of orange and red and blue, and she had 19 children. Can you imagine how confused her husband would have been? Ooh. And then also we had, which is unique to our world, most planetary princes don't default. Most planetary princes, they come early in the appearance of primitive man to teach civilization skills, don't end up falling into rebellion with their system sovereign, which is exactly what Caligastia did. So that's a unique characteristic of our planet. And it led to its own set of differentiations, including, not to be forgotten, the Adam and Eve default. Adam and Eve came a significant amount of time, 196,000 years, whatever, and they failed in their mission because the prince had not set the stage for civilization to be receptive to the teachings of Adam and Eve by the time they came. In fact, the default was so bad, so devastating, that men were little more than animals by the time Adam and Eve showed up. And then we have other distinctions as well, again, stemming from the distinction of having a default and then a material son and daughter also defaulting. And the way that story rolls out is that Eve grew impatient with the progress that was being made in helping develop humankind at that point. And as a result, she sought to speed up the process by engaging in what would be an extramarital affair. She mated with the natives, and that set a whole series of events. And that's when the Bible starts talking about the snake and being deceived. And that's why Cain ended up killing Abel. Abel was a full breed. Cain was a half-breed. Cain's father was not Adam. His father's name was Cano. And he died when the natives grew restless and took over the Garden of Eden, forcing Adam and Eve out to where they were found their second garden in Mesopotamia. Then, of course, another thing that makes all of this a differentiation to our experimental status is the fact that we had a Melchizedek come and rescue us from the abyss, literally, of just becoming spiritually degenerate. Nothing, no spirit, intellect whatsoever. Melchizedek taught Abraham monotheism, and the rest is history. But it is not usual that a Melchizedek would show up in an emergency situation like that. Then, of course, the biggest differentiation of all is the appearance of Michael, a creator son, on his seventh bestowal mission. Only one world in 10 million. In fact, only one world in all of Michael's domain would have the privilege of hosting a creator son, the highest order of sonship in the known universe. He who has seen the Son has seen the Father. Well, we saw the Son and we saw the Father in that seventh bestowal mission in Palestine or Bethlehem, Nazareth, with Jesus. That is probably perhaps the greatest differentiation of all. Number 10, the Urantia book. You know, nowhere have I seen so far have they explained that they have used a book to uplift human understanding. And even when they describe the normal path, nowhere is it written that they hand the book to a bunch of people and say, here's the truth. So I believe the Urantia book is a huge differentiation. Another thing that is interesting about our... Well, I think that pretty much is it. There's other things like the Neanderthal that failed to adapt, that were more prone to disease, and that's a result of the Adamic default. We can also explore that there were more inferior strains in the early development of early man that were allowed to continue, and this explains part and parcel why there are certain groups of human beings that are just, their thinking process is so inferior that, so backward in their understanding of things. Not many, but enough. And that's lived on in DNA as well. So, I think the big thing there is the disease. You know, being prone to disease is something unique to our world. More prevalent parasitic forms of vegetable life still persist. And that, of course, the result of the Adamic default. And then, of course, you know, the fact that the Creator Son is also our planetary prince, which is unheard of in any local universe. Usually a planetary prince is a magisterial son or an avonal son. Very rare is it consisting of a Creator Son. There's only one Creator Son in our universe, and that's Christ, Jesus, Michael. So we're going to leave it there, and I hope that you've enjoyed this. I hope that you think I'm kind of in the mood for a little South American music. So I'll leave you with that, and I appreciate you. And I realized that we were going to try to have a guest on to talk about Christ and the cross, but we'll do it again. And there are some past episodes. If you dig back last year, we did a special on that as well. And God bless, and I hope that you have a blessed day of honoring our Christ, our Jesus, as he ascended on high and completed the mission that God had set him out to do. And he did it gloriously. Until next time, thanks again for stopping by, and we appreciate you here on the Urantia Radio Podcast.